This is The Synchronized Universe with Dr. Claude Swanson. I'm a physicist. For those who are just tuning in for the very first time or have not been to the website, as you may know about me, I was trained at MIT and at Princeton as a PhD in physics. In the mid-80s, I came across remote viewing and began realizing the universe was not quite the way they taught me in school. There were a few things they'd left out. Since then, I've been trying to follow up all the evidence on all the different sides of the paranormal to figure out what's real in the universe, how it really departs from the way we're taught in school, the pieces that are going to be the new scientific revolution, the new parts that are really changing the paradigms of how we understand life and matter and spirit. And tonight, it's my pleasure to bring on for an interview a near-death experiencer named Julia Nightingale from Nashville, Tennessee. Julia, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Good evening.
Good evening. For people who want to check on the website, my website is www.synchronizeduniverse.com, Synchronized Universe with a Z, synchronized. And Juliet's is www.towardthelight.org. Is that right, Juliet?
Correct. Correct.
And one of the things that we learn as we start studying the paranormal and start looking at all the things that differ from the way most Americans are taught growing up is that that life is not exactly the way we're taught. Maybe even death is not the way our culture would have you believe. And there are people living today, and Juliet is one of them, who has actually been on the other side, in fact, more than once. And she comes back with direct information, and the stories that people like Juliet have about what dying is like and what the other side is like are really changing our understanding of what the whole purpose of being here is, of what it means to be a human being, and what's really going on. So Juliet, would you talk a little bit about your background and what led up to your first near-death experience?
Well, sure. Actually, I'm not from Nashville, as you can probably tell, even though I do live in Nashville, Tennessee.
Isn't that a Nashville accent?
I am from the north of England, and I was born during World War II in Lancashire in a town called Blackpool. Well, I was constantly very deathly ill as an infant, as a child, into my youth. Actually, I've been ill more than I've not been ill. And so with having pulmonary conditions, very severe ones, such as pneumonia constantly and also tuberculosis, I did die and was kind of hovering between life and death a lot as a child. At the same time, I was also having very powerful clairvoyant experiences and all of those experiences, mystical experiences that I've come to find with a lot of other fellow practitioners is that we thought that this was normal. We thought that everybody was this way. Being able to see things, being able to see into and experience other dimensions, other planes of reality, other beings, in fact, the invisible friends that children have are not imaginary. They're actually real. And as a child, one is still able to remember past life experiences and still access other dimensions. And it's just very natural until we are brainwashed and trained out of that. Oh, no, that's just make-believe. Well, it's not make-believe. So being very ill...
Juliet, can you maybe give a description of when you were a child and you were ill a lot and you were going in and out of consciousness maybe or in and out of your normal state? Can you describe maybe an example or what it kind of felt like to be on the other side and then what it looked like and what you, how you knew that you weren't just in a hospital room with your family, and who it was that you saw when you were in that place. And just give us a feel, because most of us, you know, are not aware or haven't had those experiences. Could you try to help us understand what the experience might have been like for you?
Sure. Well, one of the things is that it was really euphoric in a lot of ways, and certainly not the drug-induced type of euphoria, but straight away I could feel this profound love that was surrounding me, an unconditional love that was surrounding me, being totally accepted, totally embraced, just as I am. And another thing that I experienced was, of course, seeing and feeling this light all around me, and it wasn't the type of light that you would think of as burning your eyes or hurting you, but everything being so luminous. And with that light is also sound, if you can imagine that sort of thing, that there's
what kind of sound?
Well, you know, it's interesting because as I'm reading your book and reading other books, I'm trying to, you know, come up with terminology that will help better explain these things. And the best thing that I can come up with right now is the music of the spheres. It
mm-hmm.
is an otherworldly kind of sound and music that is so harmonious and so beautiful. And, of course, a lot of NDEs, near-death experiences, have described this kind of thing whilst they're on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I also saw other beings. And an interesting distinction about seeing beings on the other side, and I'm going to give you two examples. One is that looking at beings that would be considered angelic or angels or what have you, they don't have these feathery wings like artists portray them on this plane. They don't look like a bird's wings or something like that. Actually, you don't see any wings at all. The interesting distinction is you see the head, the arms, the shoulders, and part of the torso, but then it evaporates at the waist and sort of becomes like a little tail. So it's sort of like looking at a comet with a head and arms and a sort of body that you can see. And
now, how do you know that it's an angel when you're looking at it?
Yes. Now, what's very interesting is that the artist Andy Lakey was at our IANS, International Association for Near-Death Studies, conference last year. Well, now it's, sorry, not last year, but almost 2 years ago in 2004, his book, it's called Angels and Miracles, if my memory serves me correctly. And it's all about himself and a lot of paintings that he did of angels. Well, it blew me away to see them because they're exactly as I saw them on the other side. Without the feet, without the legs, it was just these beautiful beings that evaporate at the waist. And I've had notes with other NDEs who've also seen the same thing. So there's that kind of image that I saw. Also, I saw beings, and even sort of imagining myself looking like this, although it's not like I was looking at a mirror on the other side, but other beings that I saw were in wispy light formations that pulsated light and sound. So again, we're talking about sound and light that are intermingled together. And they're very, very beautiful, and I'm actually starting to do paintings and drawings of these images because we do have a form, a spirit form, that doesn't look anything like our physical form. And I am a medium, and so when I see people on the other side, a lot of times they will project themselves to me in their human form for the sake of people that I'm talking to, in other words, their loved ones or friends, because that is a recognizable form.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's not actually what they look like on the other side.
Can you describe in more detail how they do look on the other side. Are they just blobs of light with no features, or do they have recognizable features, or how can you describe what the second form does look like?
Well, they do have features, but it's not like a human form again. And this is very interesting because a friend crossed over right after Thanksgiving, the American holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And so right after I got the call, I said, "Earl, what do you look like now?" Suddenly I beheld a beautiful vision and I thought, aha, this looks familiar because I've seen these forms before. So I started drawing it, and it's kind of interesting because when I showed the drawing to his wife after I did it, she said that it reminded her of different creatures they saw when he used to do deep sea diving and photography. It sort of looks like, again, a comet or an inverted water drop that's larger at the top, usually a little bit larger at the top, and then it's sort of kind of like a jellyfish,
mm-hmm.
very wispy. And so you'll see these bits of light, but you can also sort of see through them. So it's not like a solid splotch of light. There's these different wisps of light that do form specific shapes and patterns. So you could think of those different patterns as features, and
uh-huh.
everyone is unique, and they're very, very beautiful. So,
and when you look at these beings, I mean, do they have unusual colors to them, or are they just white light? Or?
They're mostly, what I have seen is mostly various shades of white, very pale lavender, very pale blue, and they're quite iridescent.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you were a young child and you were having these experiences on the other side, did you also encounter relatives of yours or people that you knew?
Well, I didn't really know people, to be honest, because I'm an orphan. So I didn't have a family in the traditional sense of family. But it was interesting because I was always aware of very loving beings around me who did feel like they were very much connected to me. And what's interesting is that the near-death experience I had, which is called the transcendent, there's four kinds of near-death experiences that PMH Atwater describes. And this one that I had actually 30 years ago now was the fourth type of near-death experiences, which is the transcendent experience. And when I was told that I had to come back to the physical plane, which absolutely broke my heart beyond measure, I suddenly saw before me a beautiful being pouring love into me. And it was like, this is my gift for accepting the burden of returning to the physical plane to do this sacred work.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw that spirit form. Then 5 years later, I met the human form of that entity. And the reason we were able to recognize each other was because of our essence. So I met him in spirit form. I did not see his human form on the other side. I saw only his spirit form. But when I met him on the physical plane, I recognized him, and he recognized me immediately.
Now, when you were going through these ups and downs in terms of the medical problems, I mean, were you clinically dead at any time? Or what were
absolutely.
Doctors?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, 30 years ago, I can remember the date when I was clinically dead,
mm-hmm.
because it was my birthday. February is my birthday. What's interesting, though, is that from the other side, I did not know it was my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that doesn't really mean anything on the other side, nor does the legal system, nor does anything else. All of that is man-made. So with that NDE, I had colon cancer. I lapsed into a coma on Boxing Day, which is 26 December, and that was 1975. I was in a coma for over 5 weeks. I completely lost my vital signs and was clinically dead on my birthday, 2nd February. And then a few days after that, I came out of the coma and was connected to a life support system in the hospital. So
wow.
That was a really profound experience, to say the very least.
Yeah. How I'm sure you know a lot of other people who've had near-death experiences. I mean, you mentioned PMH Atwater. Of course, Daniel Brinkley is one of the well-known people. A lot of other folks who had these things. And Dr. Raymond Moody, as you, of course, well know, did this big survey and tried to analyze people's experiences. And he found some pattern in terms of, you know, the various elements that make up the typical near-death experience. I was wondering if you found that their experiences were similar to yours, how you would compare yours with theirs.
I'm so pleased you asked that question, because Raymond Moody, first of all, coined the term near-death experience. I prefer to call it an eternal life experience. There's two reasons for this. Number one, we are not near death, we actually do die. So there's an inaccuracy there, and being near death is only from the perspective of the observer. From the experiencer's vantage point, we don't even think about that word death or being dead. It doesn't even occur to us, and it is an afterthought, if the thought even occurs at all. The second thing is that with Raymond Moody, it seems like a lot of people will always want to think about a tunnel, going through a tunnel and seeing the light. A number of NDEs do go through a tunnel, but the vast majority of near-death experiences do not have a tunnel experience. And PMH Atwater has gone to great lengths to really give detailed accounts of near-death experiences, and the reason that her work is particularly special is because not only was she a researcher for 26 years, she's also a near-death experiencer. She's had 3 NDEs. So what she has got to say carries a lot of weight. Raymond Moody is not an NDEer. He is a psychologist and one who has done a lot of research, but he's not actually been there. So there are a few of us who are working on expanding the way people think about the near-death experience and what it actually is. But definitely feeling this sense of profound, unconditional love enveloping me, that has always been the case. Even though I saw some scenes that were very unpleasant, I wasn't actually in those scenes, so it's not like I was caught up or involved in it. It was more like being an observer that these things do exist. For example, hell.
Juliet, were the scenes that you saw, were they associated with things that had happened in your life or things you had done, or are they just totally independent of that?
Both. Some of the scenes were pertaining to me personally. But that's another thing about the transcendent near-death experience, is that it incorporates a lot of things that are not personal to the experiencer, and things that are very expansive, that will include revelations, that will include information that needs to be shared with others, and that sort of thing. So what I saw indeed was a combination of things that affected me both personally and things that really were not personal to me at all, but that did apply or would affect people on this plane. You know, like, for example, people wonder what happened to souls, you know, Hitler, that's a big one that people bring up. Oh, what will have happened to Hitler? And what I found out is that going through a hellish state is only a temporary state, that one just passes through, but it is not a permanent state at all. And in fact, when I was on the other side, I was reassured constantly that every being without failure, without exception, will ultimately return to the light. There's no way that we cannot return to the light because we come from the light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of Daniel Brinkley's statements that I like a lot is he said this to an audience that I was in. You know, he looked at everyone in the audience and said, "You're as dead right now as you're ever going to be." You know, because our consciousness just continues on. It just when our bodies die, our consciousness just keeps on going. It seems like
that is absolutely the truth. And in fact, when I've given any talks to people, I always tell them, "Well, the verdict has been handed down. You have been sentenced to eternal life." And it's true, because we just have a shift in consciousness and actually an upsurge of energy. And Pim Van Lommel, PMH Atwater, Peter Fennick, and myself, we've all used the analogy of a radio or a TV. And that is, when you're listening to one radio station broadcast, then you switch to another radio broadcast on a different frequency. The other radio station you were listening to is still broadcasting, but it's just on a different frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So when you leave your body, you actually move to a higher frequency. Your consciousness and your selfhood remain totally intact, but you no longer require a dense physical body so that you can operate on the third dimensional plane, which, as you know as a physicist, vibrates at a very low vibrational frequency.
Right. In fact, you know, that's the synchronized universe model that I describe in my book. You know, is trying to help people understand how this physical reality is just sort of one frequency, and you know, as we shift, we can become aware of other realities. So it's just trying to paint that same idea. You know, that I think we get so. The average human being who doesn't have a near-death experience, especially, gets so wrapped up in this physical dimension. We think that matter is all there is, you know, and we think that it's all about how much matter you can accumulate, how much gold, how much money, how many cars and, you know, houses. And they get totally wrapped up in that, and they're unaware of that this is an illusion, you know, as the Hindus say, you know, this is Maya, this is the illusion world, and the world that really lasts, that keeps on going and is there all the time, is this other higher loving, you know, universe. And I think that if people could just get this lesson that you have, that your death experience teaches, you know, it would be, you know, man, what are we racing around in circles about? You know, what's really important? You know?
Well, exactly. And your book, I dare say, is such a godsend. I will forever be grateful to you, my friend, for writing that book and publishing it, because every page I turn just makes me feel more grateful. And also, what a wonderful validation, because I, too, have done remote viewing. I am a medium. I am a mystic. I've been doing this stuff all of my life. And so to get this from the scientific perspective and to say, wow, this is wonderful, because sadly I've been severely ridiculed for this.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the fact that I have been sent back time and again from the other side specifically to share with the world that life is indeed eternal. It's not just a beautiful theory or a religious belief. I'm coming from more than the perspective of belief. I'm coming from experience. So I feel like I've got a little bit of authority here, because I've been to the other side so many times. And the interesting thing about this, too, is that just as you were saying, this plane is nothing but a hologram. And on the other side, I can actually see the waves. I mean, when you get right down to it, it's sort of interesting. As I'm writing HTML code for working on websites, I realize, well, that is what makes up everything that we experience in the physical universe. If you can imagine the physical plane being a website, everything behind what you see is nothing but code and waves. And I think you can explain that better than I can.
Well, it's wonderful. As you said that, I remembered I was talking to somebody else a couple of days ago who has a lot of out-of-body experiences at night. And while she was traveling in this out-of-body realm, she met some being, and she was in some strange place and asked him what it was. And he said, it's a hologram and we haven't finished yet. It's like they were writing the code for
yes.
another hologram and they hadn't completed it. So it's just kind of wonderful.
Well, see, what's interesting is that the collective consciousness, every moment, is writing and creating this code and then implementing it. But this isn't reality. It's just it's just a bunch of fun that we're having, and it's challenging indeed, but, and that's why, getting back to Pim Van LeMille, for example, using the analogy of a television, you see these images on the television, but they're not coming from the television. They're just being transmitted through it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
That brings me to the point that you are also making in your book, is that the brain is not where our consciousness resides. It is
right.
strictly the receiver, or what is transmitting the information for us to use and assimilate on this plane. But our consciousness exists outside of the brain. And thank goodness for people like Dr. Peter Finnick, Dr. Pim Van LeMille, yourself, and PMH Atwater, you know, who are so lovingly bringing this into the open and validating it. Because, for example, Dr. Peter Finnick points out that these experiences happen when there is absolutely no brain activity whatsoever. Again, flatline.
Yeah, it tells us our whole model, the whole Western civilization model for how things work is really wrong. I mean, it has elements in it of truth, but it's leaving out some really important pieces, you know, that this whole holographic idea and the whole idea of the reception from outside, and those things just are not in our current way of thinking about these things. But let me ask you another question, Juliet. So, was that your last NDE 30 years ago, how long did you, was there a time when your health got better, or were there some continuing NDEs, or how did that all unfold?
Well, I've had a lot of out-of-body experiences, and I kind of do that routinely too, but no, I actually had a very brief NDE in 1989
mm-hmm.
From meningitis. And that, too, was very magical. My daughter was with me, looking after me at that time. And, of course, I wasn't away for as long as I was 30 years ago. So I referred to the NDE 30 years ago just because it was the most elaborate, shall we say, the most detailed. But every time I go through an experience like this, it just keeps reminding me and reassuring me of how truly sound I am and not crazy at all. And then, again, reading your book, I just thought, oh, thank goodness, you know, because now I'm spending a lot of time also trying to encourage other people, no, you're not crazy. There are other dimensions. You do exist on other planes simultaneously to this one. In fact, this is the smallest part of our experience and beingness. It's like the tip of a little pen. It certainly is so insignificant compared to who we really are and what we really possess as far as our beingness is. And here, Jane Roberts, who channeled Seth back in the 1960s, boy, she was ahead of her time with all the information that was channeled through her. And I really encourage people to read the Seth material because it is just so spot on. It's very deep. It's very complex. It's going to, you know, stretch your mind a bit. But we need our minds to be stretched. We've just been still living in infancy as far as awareness is concerned. And
yeah, she really paints the picture that reality is so much a function of consciousness, so much a function of our awareness, and that it's much more fluid than the Western idea of it, doesn't she? She really...
Fluid's the word, and in fact, what's interesting, too, PMH and I were talking about the fact that on the other side, for example, you can just think about a place, and you are there instantly. You can just...
Well, now you've seen Robin Williams' movie, What Dreams May Come.
I haven't. I've seen so few films that a lot of people have encouraged me to see that. I hope to see it soon.
Because it's all about a trip to the other side, you know, his experiences on the other side, and that happens to him there as well, you know, that as he imagines something, it's all very responsive to the imagination and the visualization of the consciousness, you know, so it's so different from how we think about material reality, although probably what we're learning, one of the things we're probably learning is that our material reality is also subject to consciousness, and if we just learn how to use our consciousness in a more focused way, we can reshape the reality around us, too, I'm guessing. What do you think of that?
Well, that's what I was just now pointing out, is that, you know, on the other side, being able to think about someone or someplace or something and have it manifest instantly, whoa, just to give you an idea of what our potential is. And, of course, we've been so conditioned to believe that that is not possible, that we have thought ourselves into such a limited form, you know, we're able to manifest so little on this plane because of our thinking, and I'm struggling with that myself, I do admit, yet it's something that I'm working on, and having been to the other side countless times and seeing for myself, wow, we can do this. We can create anything we want or need. Now, of course, I'm not going to encourage anyone to create something that is destructive, you know, or that is going to be a violation on anybody else. But if we can realize that the universe is indeed limitless, that we can create anything we want and need, then the fear of lack can dissipate, and we can start instantaneously creating things just out of nowhere. People in India do it all the time, and it's very natural to them.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's so important. Yeah, that the fear of lack. You know, that if we understand that there is plenty for everyone, and we can create whatever we need, then all the wars that we have, fighting over territory and oil and, you know, everything else, that just goes away. You know?
Absolutely, it's so ludicrous. All of this kind of thought and fear, and you as a physicist, I'm sure, can verify this. Fear is a very low, dense vibrational frequency. And I've actually seen pictures of what fear looks like on that graph, whatever you call that. And then I've seen images of what love, that vibrational frequency, looks like. It's very, very different. It vibrates at a very high frequency, shorter and higher wavelengths. So when people say you cannot mix love and fear, that is the absolute truth. So when you are in a state of love, you feel that total oneness with all life. You know that you are one with the divine and that you are part of the divine and that you co-create with the divine and can have anything that you want and need.
You know, speaking is a very, very powerful statement, you know, and I really agree with that. I have this little quote from Sri Yukteswar, who was Yogananda's teacher. He was a great yogi in India, you know, and he says, all creation is governed by law. The principles that operate in the outer universe, discoverable by science, are called natural laws. But there are subtler laws that rule the hidden spiritual planes. And this is what we're talking about, the inner realm of consciousness. And these principles, he says, are knowable through the science of yoga. It's not the physicist, but the self-realized master who comprehends the true nature of matter. By such knowledge, Christ was able to restore the serpent's ear after it had been severed by one of the disciples. So, I mean, if we really understand consciousness and how we can use it, then what we think of as this solid material world becomes plastic. It becomes pliable, and it responds. It seems like it responds to our consciousness. Is that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. And interestingly, as I was moving away, detaching more and more from the physical plane became more transparent. I started, like I said before, seeing the wave patterns of the physical plane and just seeing what a hologram it really is. My goodness me, it's not solid at all. And so our thoughts absolutely impact what manifests on this plane. And another really important point I want to make, too, that you're making in your book is that the means of communication on the other side is telepathy. Now, the interesting thing about telepathy is that people, you know, here on this plane are still questioning, oh, is that just my imagination and so on and so forth. No, it is not. And in fact, it is the most reliable form of communication there is because there's no putting on airs. There's no hiding behind anything. You don't have to. You can just be totally real. A really important point about this is that during 9/11, in other words, 11 September 2001, my daughter was in Manhattan when that incident occurred. There was no way for her to reach me via telephone or conventional means, nor me to reach her. The only thing we had was telepathy. I was able to hear her telepathically saying, "Mom, I'm okay. Mom, I'm okay." That kept me sane for most of the day. And I did get upset when I still hadn't heard from her early on that evening. And then when I finally did get her phone call, I was so grateful to hear from her, and she affirmed, "Yes, Mom, I was telepathically communicating to you all day. Mom, I'm okay."
That's wonderful. That
yes.
Really is. I love your image that as you sort of pass from this world to the other side, that this world becomes transparent. You can start to see the waves and sort of see through it. I'm thinking, you know, in the movie The Matrix, which you maybe have not seen either, but it's in a way it's a metaphor for the same picture, you know, that our physical reality is an illusion, and there are times when the hero of The Matrix starts to really get tuned in, then he starts to see their reality as these sort of line drawings and circuits, and you know, it's all semi-transparent. He sees through it all, and then he can manipulate it. So it's so much like what you're describing.
Yes, and again, it's almost like writing the HTML code, you know. It's really very interesting, and it's so insignificant. And another thing that I want to share about dying, because I'm really committed to helping people overcome their fear of death.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really unlike going to sleep at night. You close your eyes and you start drifting into the alpha state, into a trance state where most of us mediums and clairvoyants get messages anyway, into this a beautiful trance state that's very peaceful, and you see and feel and experience all kinds of things, you still continue to be conscious, but your body is doing something else. It's resting because it needs to rest so that we can go about doing more important business, because our consciousness is always busy and active. And so, you know, some people just don't wake up in their bodies again, but what do you know? I'm still conscious. I'm still alive. I'm still real. I can still experience all these wonderful sensations, and I'm free. It's kind of like being a bubble. I had no sense of weariness or hunger or thirst or being dense or heavy. I could just float around very quickly or just hover about something. And it's the most beautiful, free feeling. And I really love going through that. And, of course, I experience it with the out-of-body OBEs as well. And then with the spiritually transformative experience, you can have that feeling of oneness as you do when you are on the other side without having to be on the verge of death. So the good news about that is that one doesn't have to go be on the threshold of death in order to have these transcendent kinds of experiences. In fact, tell me if this makes any sense to you, that there is a quickening taking place now that is causing everyone and everything on the physical plane to vibrate at a higher frequency.
So yeah, I believe that's right. I think there's two things that I was thinking about that. Number one, it just seems like, in a way, we are sort of discovering these dimensions. In a way, our culture is kind of reawakening to the awareness of these other states, which are maybe, you know, are really the more fundamental real states. And it's almost like we just discovered 500 years ago when the continent of America was discovered. You know, it was a whole new awakening to some larger world. And that's what we're doing today. And I think maybe it's because we're approaching 2012. Clearly our planet is experiencing some resource problems, the weather, earth changes, global wars. There are lots of things going on that, you know, are giving us signals that some large change is close. And so I think maybe that is kind of behind why everything's happening so fast right now. But let me ask you another question. I know your website is www.towardthelight.org, right?
Correct.
And would you describe, you're into several different types of activities and services. I think you counsel people, you work with the near-death experiences. Describe some of the different types of activities you do and how people can contact you and things like that in terms of that practical side of what you're doing these days.
Okay, well, first of all, I will let everyone know that if you're in Nashville, Tennessee, I do run a support group, a discussion support group on near-death and similar spiritually transformative experiences. It is the Friends of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, Nashville, and it is FOI Nashville for short. I am the International Relations Coordinator for the FOIs in the world for the International Association for Near-Death Studies, IAMS. I have that meeting every month from 4 to 6 p.m. here in Nashville, and you can see that on my website by going to towardthelight.org and clicking on Near-Death Support. I also counsel people with regards to grief. I am a clairvoyant and a medium, so I do give readings. But it's more than just readings, because I also do a lot of coaching and counseling. Again, a lot of people question their very sanity because they're having experiences that they can't quite understand or define. So I help them with that, and I encourage them about that. And I also help people understand the afterlife. I am getting ready to give talks and classes, and some of the topics that I'm going to be covering is what every caregiver should know about the dying process, near-death, out-of-body, and spiritually transformative experiences. Also exploring the many facets of after-death communications, experiencing the afterlife and the immortality of the soul, and also intuition and telepathy. So these are all things that are very, very important, you know, for me to address and to share with people. There is an article that I have just published on my website called The Dying Process from an Experiences Perspective. So that gives details about what it feels like to die and what actually takes place when one is dying. And I'm hoping that that will help people to overcome their fear of death. I also do Reiki and remote healing. Reiki stands for Universal Life Energy. So that consists of light healing touch, and I can do that either in person or I can do it across the world. I have got clients in the UK and in Scandinavia, different parts of Europe and in North America that I've sent Reiki to. So that's something that can be done remotely. So I focus on my work as a clairvoyant and a medium, and also offering the near-death studies and support and counseling, and then the healing work and doing classes and seminars and talks to small groups. So basically, that's it in a nutshell, and I also have got an online press kit which people can also access through towardthelight.org. That site has got, as we speak, I believe 42 pages. It includes a number of articles, and I'm, of course, I'm getting ready to put your article from a chapter of your book on my website. There's also an article from Pim Van Lommel about the validity of the near-death experience. There's also the lecture from Dr. Peter Finnick that's on there. I've got material from Dr. PMH Atwater, and I've also got articles that I've written. So it's,
you know, one of the things I think that, that people who might be skeptical or might be sort of a new thing to them to need to understand is that there have been studies done during near-death experiences, and people who are out of body and describe, say, wandering around the hospital in their out of body, their astral spirit form while their body is lying there on the table dead. And they describe things happening in other parts of the hospital, other locations. Some even get messages from loved ones around the world. And then when they come back into the body sometime later, they've been able to verify their statements.
Absolutely.
So it's not just a hallucination of a dying brain or something. It's something that actually has been verified. So we know that the information has validity to it. You know, these experiences are real. You know?
Well, in PMH Atwater's book, she did with the series Complete Idiot's Guide books, and I've got the Complete Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences, and in fact, I've still got a few copies left that people can purchase from me if they want to, and IANS has also got a few copies left. These are out of print. She does plan to do a revised, updated version of it, but what's interesting is that she's got a chapter called Debunking the Debunkers, and in that chapter, she is explaining why and how the near-death experience is not a hallucination. And the one big difference is that the after effects are completely different from a near-death experiencer as opposed to somebody who's had some drug-induced hallucination or what have you.
People are so different afterwards that their whole attitude toward life changes, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's a permanent change. It's an absolute permanent change. And I was never one to really do drugs. I mean, I admit I did try LSD very briefly, and it was fun, but I took a very light dose of it. It's so different from a near-death experience.
You know, Juliet, it seems like what we're doing here, people used to say, they used to joke, you know, they were kind of born into this body without a user's manual. You know?
Yes.
And it seems like what we're doing here is we're constructing one, you know, from experiences like yours, where we're sort of learning, we're creating a user's manual to sort of say, well, this is what it seems to be about. And if people just understood more of this, life would be a lot easier and learning our lessons would be a lot easier. I mean, you know, speaking of lessons, I know we don't have more than a couple more minutes, but did you ever see any, did you have any past life, any panoramic life review or any evidence of karma or things like that? Did that ever come up at all in your experience on the other side?
Well, I've seen myself mostly, and this might sound a little strange, not on this planet, but on different, how do I say this? Not only different planets, but in different realms. And actually, TMH does a better job of explaining this better than I do, and she says that child NDEs have this type of thing more frequently. They describe being an different realms, different frequencies even,
mm-hmm.
more so than other planets. And
well, you know, Dolores Cannon, in her regressions of people, sometimes they end up in these other very different types of dimensions. There's a one universe which she calls a fourth dimensional universe, which is an energy universe where your thoughts, again, are manifested almost immediately, you know.
Exactly.
And so I'm wondering if maybe it's a little bit like that, and it just seems like it's such an exciting universe, and we're just starting to explore it. But these higher dimensions and the importance of consciousness, and you know, all of these features that we're sort of getting our toes wet here, learning about, you know, play such an important role.
And the one thing that I really want to stress, too, that I did see on the other side, the very important message that I received is that only love prevails, that regardless of what we're experiencing in this world right now, and I know it seems really dark and volatile and very foreboding, but the light is getting brighter even as this world is getting darker. And no matter what, the light is going to prevail because it has to. And if we allow ourselves to open up into new and higher forms of consciousness and being in the love, then we do not have to succumb to the limiting imposition of being forced to believe that this is all there is. I mean, how daft is that?
I love that. That's a wonderful, wonderful message to end our show on. Only love is real. And if you want to learn more, go to Juliet's website, www.towardthelight.org. And, you know, please always feel free to come to my website, synchronizeduniverse.com, and check out what's happening there. And we will see you next week with another wonderful guest. And Juliet, thank you so much, and thanks everyone for listening. Goodbye.
It's been an honor.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.